Okay, so the organizers came utterly unprepared to this discussion because it
which
is
was my purpose.
It is on purpose, yes. Yeah, so Susanne will tell why.
Because we are the organizers and you are the thinkers. So the idea is if anybody has a particular idea what they want to discuss, I'm making a collection of topics. And then we can start discussing. We can also start discussing and then write it down. So the idea was I write down the questions and Tommaso, since he is the control guy, that's the quality control. That's what Q control stands for. Okay.
The general context is we would like to be useful for you, right? I mean, control people would like to be useful to molecule people, in the sense that if you have some problems that we can contribute solving, we would be delighted. And also, we should bear in mind that actually quantum control does come from molecular physics and quantum chemistry. We have here some of the protagonists of this field who really, you know, come from chemistry, right? And this is where these ideas have been developed by people. I mean, Paul was pioneering that among the first. And so somehow, I mean, we are giving back in a way. And also, this is a reason of interest for us because, I mean, it is one thing to imagine and cook up some models, but the other thing is to have some real systems where things not only can make an impact, but they are more fun in really implementing it. Yeah.
Okay, there are, of course, the kind of very obvious, how can we cool molecules, how can we prepare fancy superposition states in molecules, how can we prepare many-body states, right? I can write this down and we can start discussing, but perhaps somebody has somewhat more detail, more intelligent formulation of
Thank you. But it's a bit more general. So I was wondering, like, how well can we control open systems in general, and especially reservoir engineering? So can we finally use dissipation to do something good for cold models?
Sounds somewhat familiar.
Yeah, sure. No, in the sense that we just had a one-hour discussion with Luis Davidovic, who unfortunately is not here. Maybe I should really call him. Because, I mean, he's among the people who invented the reservoir engineering, right? And this is very correct. I should really call it.
So how well can we do it in realistic experimental systems?
Of course, yeah, exactly.
Or tomorrow in the lab.
That's okay.
Today on the blackboard, tomorrow in the lab.
So the question would more be
what happened with reservoir engineering, like realistically? And can we use dissipation as a resource driving a system towards some less heavy state?
I mean, the question is not if you can, the question, on paper you can. The question is what are the achievable.
This is why I wrote Hobel, right? Not better.
So is it Markovian? What limit do you get? Is it non-Markovian? What resource can you have? So on paper we can cook up whatever. What drift dynamics is present in the system?
What
can
you do in the labs? That's what we're
question. That's the challenge.
We could also say, in my sense, what are the requirements for that? So what kind of control knobs you would need in a realistic system?
In a realistic system, because again, if you want to study that as a, that's one of the things that
means that if we have
from a general control theoretic point of view, you can write down the theorem necessary in sufficient condition.
Common field of, let's say, common molecules in a lattice, so what kind of things you
Is there a way, can we do with tomography to infer the Hamiltonian appropriate for molecular components?
Okay, so so what does it describe that fully if I write measurement instead of tomography or?
Well, just we think of often in terms of tomography too.
Okay, I write both. Okay.
Call it system identification if you want. That's how the control theory guys are calling it. It can be done by measurement.
But we call it measurement. Okay. let me write it in plain molecular and in quantum control language, okay? So measurement, what did you say, system identification?
No, but those are two slightly different things.
Okay, then we write it both, okay?
Sure, that's right. But because one thing is you do measurement, you do tomography, you have some state, you want to know what the state is. Another thing is you have a system, you do not know what is the Hamiltonian,
or the
model that describes it, so you start shaking the system to see how it reacts, you look inside, right?
So with all of that, I forgot to say the actual...
to infer the Hamiltonian.
Okay.
Or
smart concrete information than just a measurement of the system.
You have to be able to learn about your system and formulate a dynamical model. So you might want to figure out the Hamiltonian, the dissipation channels that are there naturally, because before coming in the control, you need to know what the system is doing on its own.
And maybe not in response to different types of controls that you could apply.
So there's the one thing, and this is where all this discussions that we had go. One of the difficulties with all the molecular systems, both with single molecular and even more with many body, is that there are really no obvious, or often no obvious, strong dissipation channels in the system. So how can we deal with less than perfect dissipation channels, or dissipation channels which actually provide only relatively weak dissipation?
This is in one thing, as we discussed, where really this reservoir engineering question comes
exactly.
up, because this was invented in a way to get, to exploit some strong other dissipation channels with respect to what we have in order to increase the dissipation to some desired state.
So, Ivan, what you wanted to say?
It depends,
because if the natural dissipation completes...
The point is, I wanted to ask, are you kind of reformulating my question for me, or I said another one? Okay, then we take you next.
I was saying another question that maybe I have for the community, the molecular community, which was at some level brought up by Tommaso at the beginning, is how much has been thought about or has been employed in terms of sort of the traditional type open loop control, where you want, you have some Hamiltonians you can apply, some microwaves, some Raman lasers, whatever you have in the lab, and you say this is controllable and we're going to be able to drive the system in some maybe coherent way. To drive a desired unitary transformation that makes a very desired state that's maybe not the ground state of the molecule, but some excited state vibrational rotational that might then be a useful component of a many body system. So how much has been explored in the cold molecule polar molecule community of control?
So far, in that
traditional sense.
So far, as far as I can judge this, that question was simply kind of, first we have to get to the ground state, and after that's easy. So, but let's try to formulate this question.
So,
can you start from the beginning again?
So I guess the question I would ask is, are there useful open loop control approaches? And what I mean by open loop control is not in a unitary setting.
But I'm confused here, because if I go back to the very beginning when the optimal control community came up with ways for instance, tracking expectation values of observable or selectively bound breaking of these things, this was in the 80s, and after that, I think that experiments have been.
They have been at some level, sure, but I mean, this is in the context of cold molecules.
Yeah.
And there's very little that's been done in that.
So the key thing here is specifically with respect to the traditional molecular is what are the challenges or what differences the cold?
I would say so.
Okay, good.
People did quite a bit of work in photo association and control.
Yeah, I have that.
Yeah.
So one, you mentioned a few things like that you would do, for instance, like Raman conditions, like column values. So that's a tool that's employed a lot, sideband cooling, these kind of things.
Sideband cooling, no.
Not for the molecules.
Not for the molecules, because for that you need a good dissipation channel, and you don't have this.
Okay. So maybe things like that, I don't know, maybe you could just make a list of a few techniques that are common to you, because you must do some control now. And
perhaps I put that as a question, and we also make that. What are they? What? He's already.
And what's wrong with that? I guess it would be interesting to know what can you do, and then, like, you know, why is it not good enough? It might just be, you know, you have a technique, and if it works well, you know, then it's good. But there's no point, you know. I could say I have another technique that works as well, but it wouldn't give you the advantage. So the interesting thing would be, well, this is, you know, this technique that works, but this is kind of where we'd like to improve it. Yeah.
So is that a sufficiently long list of questions?
This is one line. So if you need that side for the control, then I cannot write anymore. Okay.
No, because we could start with.
Just want to ask one question. I mean, from being outside the cold community, people always mention the idea of getting down to the ground state, and that's all very nice. But what is it that you actually want to do in cold atom chemistry or cold molecule? So you want to control reactions? You want, what do you want to do? What's the target?
Yes, and yes. Okay. So yes, we want to do ultra cold chemistry. That would probably be not the first on the list because it's a habit, right? We want to do quantum information, quantum simulation, basically that. So any kind of many-body, two-body, whatever, few-body and many-body controlled interactions. That's basically.
So okay. So if we have this this list, actually, since the first on top is actually I dragged the poor Luis from his office. He was doing something else because he thought. I mean, he's not really working on molecules. But since he is one of the people who invented or at least revived to a large extent reservoir engineering in recent years, I thought that it would be useful for us to get his perspective, and then we can let him, allow him to go back to his office. But I thought it would be really very bad not to have his view on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if reservoir engineering would be useful to drive a system to the ground state, because reservoir engineering can produce exotic states. It can even produce solutions for quantum computation in a dispersive way, and that has been shown recently.
So that means that the question is perhaps not so much can we do reservoir engineering, but more can we change your view on reservoir engineering from doing complicated states in a simple system to do simple state in a complicated system.
Yeah. But then again, the trick is to have some strong dissipation channel. And some, you mentioned here the natural, you know, channels that are there. And by doing this, you can actually overcome them. In another sense, you can build an artificial reservoir that is stronger than the others. So the others become a small perturbation. And then you attract the solution to the ground state of that artificial reservoir. That's the trick. Which within the framework of molecules, that means that one should find some transition which is strongly dissipative, and then use that as a help to build this artificial reservoir.
And it has not only be strongly dissipative, because we have that in molecules. It's just not well defined, right? It should be cyclic in addition, or something like cyclic. Yeah, but then it's not dissipation anymore.
We feel like a loss of energy, so just everything escapes.
This is very true. In Europe, we have an entire entire project about the cavity cooling of molecules, which is based exactly on this idea of reservoir engineering, in the sense that they create a strong dissipation channel that couples that, you know, decays into what I desire, and using cavities is one of the things that has been thought about for that. And this is something which is so in the context of control.
Is so, there something that you can do with control to get whatever, for example, a higher effective Poiseuille factor or something like that?
No. So I at least I wouldn't say so. But this is one important point, but maybe my colleagues will correct me. I mean, this relates to what we have been discussing in terms of the quantum speed limits. Like, there are limits to the, you know, for instance, speed with which you can achieve a certain quantum process given by energy scales. So quantum control is not giving you any magic. It's just giving you the possibility to saturate, to do as good as you can do, given a certain amount of physical resources, right? And very often, that is very surprising, and that is going very much beyond what one normally thinks in terms of adiabatic, you know, steer-up processes, whatever. But still, it is not something that will change the physical basis. So, for instance, I mean, this refers to what Luis just said, the fact that, you know, simple version of reservoir engineering is not allowing you to, you know, get, per se, a stronger dissipation to the ground state. But, you know, maybe enlarging the Hilbert space and going up and getting some more coupling can help in this direction. But it is not like we can change, we can stretch nature, you know, beyond what, you know, physics can give us.
So the biggest problem for understanding that was basically the scheme of using heat solid state, it's typically in atoms, maybe on a few levels, but there's a molecule, when it decays, you create entropy. So basically, you're not really cooling because you're using the dissipation from the excited state, but you create a lot of entropy.
Exactly.
Although, I mean, in theory, it's like as one paper, you could try and use a control to sort of conserve the ground state population, and then you just. But if you have lots of, if there are too many states, then basically it just decays all over the place.
That's exactly the problem.
And then it. So if you put it in a cavity, as you mentioned, does it suppress some of the decay?
That's exactly why I asked for the Poiseuille factor.
Well, G squared over 2 kappa, it will be the effective decay rate, right?
Yeah.
The kappa squared over 2 cavity.
Yes. Loss. And you are not going beyond that.
No.
But ideally what you would want is you would want to basically make sure that all the molecules of the excited state preferably decay to a certain or smaller state. And the which thing can you do that with the cavity? Is it because usually these transition frequencies they're very sort of close and
But I think I mean they are still if you look at the vibrational state, I mean this is still quite a bit further apart than a cavity. Even a bad cavity is white. I mean, and of course, bad cavity. I mean, you kind of define how bad it is. That's the nice thing about this, right? So you can control very, very well how broad your line width is in this case, right? I mean, that is the advantage of this.
So then that would suppress effectively certain transitions.
Yes, exactly.
And promote other transitions, and then all you need to do is have a good control scheme to sort of excite the states and on the excited state manifold. At least
so
the theory, right?
All what you need is just a really, really good cavity. Ideally it's right 3D, right? Because decay of course. Or a really high self factor. So that the other directions don't matter so much.
Okay, so much maybe for reservoir engineering, so that I can overcome this bad feeling and having dragged Luis out of his office, and we can allow him to return to you know, some other activity in this context. So of course, you are welcome to stay.
Oh, thank you.
But you can also come, give a bow, and we clap for you, and then you can take a good exit.
No, but really, I mean, what you just said, I mean, was not at all trivial for me, at least. I mean, it is becoming clear during the discussions that we are having here, right? Because here, what they want is not, the point is, as you said, they don't want some exotic state that they will do later. They want some very clean ground state, yeah? And this is something where we can say something, but not all of the ideas that we have, you know, are relevant for that, perhaps. Well, then the second, actually, it was like a sub-question of the first one, but really I regard it as a sort of different and more general question even, how well can we control dissipative systems? So here would be good to have comments from, we have here some people who have invented some of the control techniques for very messy and noisy systems like in NMR. And so we can have some comments maybe on that.
I think that the question as it is a little bit too broad, because how well we can control dissipative systems.
Okay, let's specify.
Yeah, first of all, a big separating line is between Markovian and non-Markovian systems. Because for the class of non-Markovian systems, by and large, the fact that there are finite memory times gives some sort of an extra resource that is not available in the Markovian case. And that means that for non-Markovian systems, there is the possibility to use dynamical open-loop control techniques, which are not available otherwise. So how well you can control in that case, that might mean, again, what do you want to do? Do you want to preserve state? Do you want to remove dissipation and steer the evolution in some determined direction? That is doable, in principle, quite well in NMR and now in a lot of quantum technologies, dynamical decoupling, dynamically corrected gates, compensating pulses. There are lots of techniques which are all taking advantage of the fact that there are finite correlation times, so there are no Markovian noise effects, and you can leverage that to effectively cancel them out while doing something else on the system. How well depends on the details. It's all a matter of time scales and pulsing capabilities, so at that point you go in the specifics of the actual technology that you are thinking to do. But by now, things like this have been demonstrated in everything ranging from NMR to trapped ion to MV centers and spin cubes.
So would you like, for the sake of our molecule friends, give a 15 seconds introduction to dynamical decoupling?
Well, the 15-second introduction, yes, sure. Everybody, I think, is familiar with ideas of spin echo, by which one acts on, first of all, it's an open loop operation, as simple as a pulse. So there is no dissipative control, it's purely coherent Hamiltonian control. And the idea of spin echo, in some sense, is like in the original NMR setting, there are a bunch of uncoupled spin one halves that results in a magnetic field, but the magnetic field is spatially inhomogeneous. And so even though the spins are all aligned and all coherent at time zero, they go out of phase because each of them picks up a different phase factor as time goes on. Nevertheless, if at a given point in time, high pulse is applied, the motion of each of these spins is reversed, so it is as if, people are familiar with Loschmidt echo, it is as if one puts a minus sign in front of the effective Hamiltonian that governs the system. And so after twice as long a time after the initial time of the evolution, the spins refocus again back altogether. Now, this is a very simple and simplistic example, but the intuition is like, if we have an unwanted dynamics, which has a finite correlation timescale, by which I mean that it can be told by a coherent Hamiltonian over some finite timescale, if we are able to manipulate the system with coherent control fast with respect to that correlation timescales, by and large, we can undo or we can average out unwanted evolution and impose evolution that we want through the coherent control. So the key words here is like there is a separation of timescales between the characteristic time of what we want to approximately remove and the timescale of the control, which is purely coherent and open loop that we are applying. So many pulses, so multi-pulse sequence is the natural extension of spin echo to remove unwanted coupling, and then the next step is like removing couplings that we don't want to have, while also imposing something that we want to achieve.
Okay, your 15 seconds are over, and Paul wants to say something. Think about I'm joking, because that was really very efficient, and you said a lot of things that can be very useful. Thank you very much.
I have a 2 second question.
Okay.
Ask Lorenzo. Have these dynamical decoupling schemes been applied to anything more than a two-level system? If the system itself is multi-level, because what I always worry about is fast pulses.
Yeah, cause unwanted leakage.
So have they been successfully applied to?
Again, the chief example that comes to my mind in this case is superconducting qubits, where actually there is a paper and experiments that follow that by Sedloy and Lin Tian, where actually the system is a multi-level system. And one has to design, the point in that case is to design the control pulse in a way which is not as naive as I just made it sound, but you want to make it smarter in such a way that it also kind of self-suppresses, it compensates for the leakage.
It stays within a two-level
Manifold. So that calls for like soft pulse techniques and pulse shaping, which is less trivial and probably also not so, I mean, depending on the device technology, you can do it more or less well, but the idea is in principle, yes.
Because the molecular case,
yes,
of course, has
of course,
hundreds
yes,
of levels
yes,
to work
yes, yes.
So now, before Sophie gets her own 15 seconds, I would like to make sure that sort of the level of discussion we are having, or the level of information we are sharing, is the type of thing that your molecule types wanted, and that is relevant for you, because it may be to it, we may diverge quickly into jargon or stuff that is no longer. So can I have a feedback, a feeling here from the molecule guys?
Open loop or closed loop?
Oh, just some quantum feedback of any kind. Yes.
Hopefully, some closed loop, you know. Otherwise, we can as well go home.
No feedback. Yes.
I don't understand much. So.
Oh, very nice. So, what is it that you do not understand?
Well, I think almost everything.
Oh, okay. Can you tell us the thing that you understand the least?
No, okay.
No, I mean, this is useful. I mean, we are here for this purpose, right?
Yeah, so I think the basic notion was spin echo, and I have never seen a single before.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so there is a question about spin echo.
Okay.
Let's collect some of these reactions before, because if everybody has not understood anything, then we will pick the few things.
Anybody with a computer can find some really simple movie about spin echo really quickly. Ad hoc.
Yeah,
I think that would be really the fastest way out of this.
You have Wikipedia.
Yeah.
It's not like I read Wikipedia, you know what?
No, I mean, I agree with
you. Okay, so this is one question.
But I just wonder, yes. Probably I'm the only guy, I'm from mostly minibody background.
Yes.
Rather than, you know, most of my colleague here is atomic.
Like, is the spin echo clear for everybody else, for instance?
No.
Not really.
Okay. Let's try to.
So that's a relevant question. Are there other aspects that, so are we speaking?
Excellent. So there we have one. The question is, should we try to project this, or is it just everybody who wants to see it?
More specific.
All right. Very good. Nobody should explain it.
Yeah. To a point of another approximation.
Can we take 5 minutes and just project this with somebody giving a 10-second explanation?
By the way, Tommaso, I didn't finish. You asked me about how well we can control this space system, but I didn't say anything about where
we're absolutely. So, absolutely, it's very clear. Okay. But there was another question here. So I like chaos because it allows us to bring a lot up, but of course we have to sort of.
I thought it would be a bit easier for like everyone if we figured out like the particular thing. Like why like what do we want really?
What you want.
So do we want to prepare molecules in the absolute state? Or why do we need like there's a more engineering in the first place? Right?
Okay.
People are doing like well, even without molecules are being prepared already in the ground state and like so it's just,
Okay. Very good. So now, do you want to have
I also have a very basic question, because I am ignorant on the other side.
Yes, yes.
What distinctive differences should I think back there, when I think to apply control to a molecule as opposed to a cold molecule, what are the main differences that I should be aware of?
A cold molecule is a molecule.
Yes, yes, but the question that Ivan was asking, are there useful open loop approaches? So why isn't the traditional, so I think I'm missing something.
The point, I think hot molecules, at least as far as I understand, control is probably not very good. I mean, a hot molecule just generally is one value, which kind of is in a mixture of a very large amount of quantum states.
The distinction I would make, and why I brought that as a cold molecule, is that, of course, there are different degrees of freedom.
Exactly.
There's electronic, there's rotational, and there's vibrational.
There's emotional, okay?
and the center of mass translation.
So we are having only two types of cold, right? The one is internal and the other one is external. So all the vibrational electronic is trivial. It's like
right, so that's why it's already been done.
Vibrational,
with respect to electrons,
exactly.
It's in its electronic ground state, but it's not necessarily
rotational,
vibrational.
Yeah.
And then there's center of mass and the triangle.
Exactly. So vibrational and rotational, I think at that point we can probably group together as being two low frequency transitions that you can really make until they decay by themselves. Emotional basically is in principle same thing as well.
So it's a problem of frequency selectivity and...
You're calling emotional the center of mass.
Center of mass. No, I mean really cooling, in terms of laser cooling, evaporative cooling.
So for them, emotional is center of mass and vibrational is emotional, but we...
Vibrational is internal, that's right.
And what they call internal, we don't call internal, so it's a mess, right?
Because we are the two quantum gods.
No, because we are poor quantum efficiency, for instance.
I mean, typically the nuclear degrees of freedom are trained classically in traditional control, where you have classical, potentials, and you're controlling the electronics.
No, in our case, it's all internal. All of that is internal. Okay, it's just that.
So that's where some of the distinction.
Well, this seems to point a little bit in that. Of course, I know that Lorenzo has not yet even started to answer the question about the dissipative system, and Sophie has not even started to speak. But still, I mean, those last comments point a little bit in the direction of. So, what are the goals? What do you want, guys, from us? Yeah. What do you want?
I'm asking this question actually. I'm not sure whether it's an answer to that.
Okay.
In the community.
You can do everything by yourself already. You don't need us.
No. I'm just wondering because it's kind of we can discuss discuss overload of dissipative systems, but if we don't have a goal, it will be kind of.
Yeah, no, actually, that's what you have talked. This kind of problem you had would be very amenable to optimal control because you had this problem of frequency explode, if they have one more frequencies and stuff. And I thought this is something where maybe optimal control could help. If you have a very simple system, if your random transition does what you want, why do you need a complicated optimal control part, right? But in your system, the problem, as I understood it, and I didn't understand much, was. The frequency, like your scheme works, but you get more and more frequencies together, and then your passage becomes harder and harder. And I think this would be a problem that optimal control.
Perhaps you can give the 10-second version of what your problem is.
You have 15 seconds for your problem.
I think you're referring to the problem of creation of solid interaction states in spin crystals, starting from some weakly interacting gas. And what we use like an array of molecules, and then you can you can realize the double blockade on microwave excitations, and you can flip spins kind of one by one, and probably it can be improved by some optimal control, but it's not a dissipative system at all. And combining it, if it's possible to use dissipation, for that it will solve this long-standing problem of creating ground states, really, to pull the system directly into the ground state, which is not being done.
So you want to prepare a many-body state of molecules.
Because we created something which can be ground state, but can be not a ground state. And we cannot probe the phase diagram of this, and nobody can, right?
Concluded at the end was that we were creating a pure state that was an excited one, and we had no way to dissipate that.
Do you want to give an example of because that's where this discussion actually started last week, right? basically, what is the difference between a single body ground state, namely, let's say, a ground molecular, ground rotational, spin down, whatever, everything absolutely in the ground state, and an actual true many body ground state, which might be anti-ferromagnetic, where the spins might go back and forth. So they are basically, in the first case, interactions don't take place, and then we have whatever that all being the ground state. If there are spin interaction, it might be an anti-ferromagnetic ground state where the spins are alternating. So that, and this is one of the really, really, really hard questions in this kind of quantum simulation, is how to get to this true many-body ground state. For example, if we are already in the single molecule ground state.
Do you have
okay.
a way of verifying that you're already in the ground state?
Let's assume we do. Right now, no, we don't. This is still an easier problem.
That's the problem of measurement, which is a different
one. So, in principle, this is what the adiabatic algorithm was designed to do, right? Take a separable individual ground state of each individual particle in the system, and then slowly turn on interactions. Mm-hmm. And then, if you do that slowly enough in the app, and there's no dissipation, then you should end up in a.
And there is no phase transition that you have.
Well, so that's what I mean by slowly enough.
Well, in a way,
and it's also a finite size system, so there's not really a phase transition, right? You might have a precursor, but there's. So you, and at least in small systems, you should in principle be able to do this, where you move slowly enough, and you should end up in a multi-body ground state.
So, but the question is, for example, this is theoretical. If you have a finite system and you have infinite time, how to do that in infinite resources? So now we go back. Can that be done in a practical way?
Finite system in a way it corresponds to finite temperature, right?
Finite size.
Okay. But like if you take if you cross the phase transition diabetically, right? Mm-hmm. Slowly in an infinite system, and you go with the same speed, you'll populate just domains, right? So create domains.
No. But this is entirely different.
Yeah.
Because if I go at zero temperature through a phase transition, and I am populating states, the population, I am creating a coherent state, which I can then use to refocus somewhere, and I can even do it non-diabatically, and I invented an algorithm to do that. If instead you have a thermal state, this is not a pure state, there is no coherence between the different components, and then you can forget everything else, right? Which brings, which is the reason why it is so relevant, the goal that you have described yourself, right?
Yeah, and I also have a very elementary question here, because many body, as I discovered, for a condensed matter physicist, many body is thermodynamic limit. Mm-hmm. When you say many body, do you really mean thermodynamic? Because I think that what Kevin said makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Your finite size, you will never close exactly the gap, so it's easier in some sense to find a good time scale.
Yeah,
the gap typically scales like 1 over n, 1 over n, whatever. But if you are in thermodynamic limit, that is where you have to
Yes and no. The idea is, of course, how do we get, what all the people who are now kind of looking at phase diagrams, etc., how do we get to that into the experimental realm, right? Then, of course, we have to give up the thermodynamic limit, obviously, because in the experiment,
you know, in any case, if we are working at temperature, microkelvin or something like this, if you have a gap that is 1 millikelvin, is a bit, it's enormously big in any case, so you don't need to make energy gaps.
You mentioned you're at a millikelvin, so you have a bunch of different degrees of freedom in the system. Are the different degrees of freedom even thermalized?
No, not. not experimentally yet.
Okay.
Are we getting a little bit better onto something which is relevant for everybody here? So who is unhappy? Because we are halfway through, we have a very hard bound boundary, which is 5:30, because the quant control group has to go to dinner. And so we are halfway through our time, and so it is important to see whether everybody is happy or who is unhappy, please.
Most unhappy Nobody person gets the next question.
Nobody is unhappy. So are we taking a path that makes sense, given the expectations here?
I would make a question to this adiabatic. So that kind of evolution would be unique. Because I think that there are like, I would see like two big control families. One that I have more coherent control, and the other is this dissipative thing. Two very different things. You would be saying that this problem,
the Adiabatic algorithm is purely Hamiltonian and is a pure tuning of, it's a time dependent Hamiltonian, mm-hmm. which is designed with the property.
It's the most coherent control of any machine.
Start the talking of this dissipation and all that, and then you would be saying that one might not need that for this problem.
You'll need dissipation to get to the ground state at the beginning, but so at the very end you might have something like a spin glass or something, which where the thermalization timescales are just massively long, and you could never just wait for the system, even if it were in a zero temperature environment, you could never wait for it to cool to the ground state. It just, these things might have lifetimes longer than you. So the idea is that at the beginning you have individual systems that each one thermalizes much faster than a many-body state would. So you can wait for short times, it will thermalize to the ground state ideally. And then once you have this pure ground state, you can evolve that adiabatically to the ground state of the multi-body system.
No. If I understand correct, that would correspond to taking, say, two atoms and approaching them in the ground state, mm-hmm. and approaching them slowly, you know, and then at the end you get the ground state of the corresponding molecule. Or there is a question of time there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
Especially as you get close to the thermodynamic limit and you really get to the point where you have approximately a true phase transition, because then, of course, I mean, your time scale is getting infinitely
longer. Forgive my total lack of preparation here. When you say close to the thermodynamic limit, is it because you're envisioning an ensemble of many molecules, or is it?
So there are two things here that I wrote, extracting them from what was said. The very important question of that you asked of preparing a many-body state of polar molecules, and then this is many molecules, of course, and then there is the equally important question, but a completely different one, of dealing with individual molecules and preparing the ground state of an individual molecule, and in this case, ground state means what they call internal state, which means the vibrational state, which means, you know, just the guy in its...
No, it means both internal
means
and
both,
external.
Yeah.
I mean, a kind of a molecule, ideally, as close as possible. One molecule, or each molecule as close as possible to 0 degree Kelvin.
And then one could start, so in a way this would be the first step, and then it's the second, one could start then, you know, thinking about these very interesting states that you were mentioning. And the general, I mean, it seems to me that this is basically, at the moment, all the goals that you guys have, right? Of course, there are many others, possibly in the future, but I mean, really, the cold chemistry is something that is really, you know, important, and many people are discussing. But I didn't see it emerge it here.
You need to have step one first, really, before you can do this.
Yes.
So what is the current state of the art in terms of one?
So people can go for certain molecules to the internal ground state. The numbers and densities, they are not very high yet, but they can do this. They can do electronic, vibrational, rotational, hyperfine, etc. Everything in the ground state, so they can do this. People even have started to laser cool molecules, so to get the motional degrees of freedom under control. Mm-hmm. However, both of them, not very many, and not for the same. Not at the same part.
Right, okay. I see. So it's either cold translationally or it's cold internally,
but not both.
That's.
And there are perhaps, I don't know what you call, but probably of the order of three labs in the world who can do this.
Lorenzo didn't have anything.
Sorry, I was waving my pants about
it. Oh, sorry. He was unconsciously waving his pants.
And also, they are strange molecules often, right?
Oh, they are not strange, they are selected molecules.
Very selected. It only works for certain molecules.
Yeah, as somebody who is ignorant about all these things,
So suppose the core polar molecule, community, the cooling and trapping community, they are able to cool varieties of molecules, the polar molecules in lowest, both translational and internal ground state. And now you guys have access to that. So what is the single most, important thing that you can do, or one that you couldn't do until then?
Alexei, what do you think about this question? I think it is a quantum simulator.
There's a couple of things that's really, this is the quantum simulator.
Topological phases. So you have many molecules in the fantastic state.
But this is not the only thing.
What do you do? Okay. What is the thing that you would think is most exciting? So for me personally, is the quantum simulator some interesting topological phases. Okay.
And for other people,
what would other people say?
Coherent chemistry.
Okay. Condensed matter, you could also like try to like do condensed matter thing.
Maybe that's all basically
the
stuff.
So
this is what
I'm
trying to see the link between.
But I think the whole chemistry is utterly different.
Was different. Yeah. So what would the people from quantum control like to do with this object? So what algorithm or what things?
What do you think that you cannot do now?
Apply, and then you think, maybe but if they could do this thing, molecules could be an interesting system to apply them.
And my answer to that is a quantum simulation, in the sense that we know how to do quantum simulations with atoms, for instance, in optical lattices. But for instance, these molecules, since they have this anisotropy, they allow for more complex topological simulations. Okay, so this would offer possibilities that atoms do not directly offer. And
for me, this sounds quantum simulation, not quantum control.
For me, quantum simulation is a branch of quantum control, in the sense that this is, having a big system and manipulating it. Okay.
Yeah. Quantum control is a tool. Yeah. So it's a tool to achieve something. And that could be a sensor, it could be a computer, it could be a simulator. So quantum control is a set of tools to achieve goals. One of them might be quantum simulation.
Does this answer make you happy?
Yeah, especially.
Not completely, but I have the quantum control, right? So I don't have to set the rules of quantum control.
So the question is also, Bala, but was your question really to the molecule community or to the quantum control?
I'm trying to, because one community can feed, there's feedback between the two communities, and the molecule community is trying to prepare these molecules with the hope that they would be useful for quantum control applications.
As Ivan says, quantum control is just a tool. That's not an application. What people are hoping is that it's useful for quantum simulation.
So let me give you another example of something that I would like to pursue, and I'm developing my control algorithms to do that. But it could be considered a type of quantum simulation. For me, I would like to be able to see what happens if I have a many body system, what is the time dependent dynamics of this in Strong-Milon equilibrium regime. So what happens, for instance, if I quench this guy? What happens how fast can I drive the system in some interesting state? What does it imply that I'm doing it faster than some, fundamental quantum limit? How does this thing thermalize in a time-dependent sense, in the vibrations or in some other, spin or pseudo-spin sense? So all these types of questions connected to many-body quantum dynamics, which are of interest for condensed matter. In a way, one can regard this as quantum simulation, okay? Because this is always about some models that you are implementing. It's not a quantum simulation of an existing material, like for instance quantum simulation of a superconductor, but it would be a simulation or emulation, as some people say, of some spin model, for instance. Okay, so that's is this simulation? Is it not? Simulation is a very general concept, and certainly quantum control is not a goal or an application. It is a tool to do interesting things. Right?
But again, you have a competitor, optical lattices without those, right? So you have to.
to see what is the more convenient for.
Absolutely, models. There are things. So as I said, anisotropy. So these topological models come up in with polar molecules because I mean actually they came up. I mean we started with Peter Zoller in like and before even before Gagin came. Thinking about this this stuff that then he did fantastically, because in atoms would not offer this anisotropy that would allow you to, for instance, to have you know a certain interaction along one direction, a different type of interaction along the other direction, which is necessary for the topological models. Which you know then you use them for quantum computing. You like them because they. You know, because they are fun, or I mean, what's your motivation? It depends. But this is one point where the polar molecules with anisotropy can give you an advantage over atoms. I mean, there are here.
There are two things about molecules why people are interested in doing the quantum simulation molecules rather than as atoms. The one is anisotropy, and the other one is long range interactions.
Yeah, right. Because of dipole.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't a polar molecule, then it wouldn't be interesting. It would be just like a molecule. So the importance of polar is that you have this.
There is a certain amount which you can do with homonuclear because they are of course not only electric dipole moments, but yeah, to the first order approximation.
There is that's why the emphasis is on polar molecules.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so it seems to me that we have all the goals here.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Actually,
you want one more goal?
One more goal.
Oh.
But I think it's more modest.
Okay.
That's good.
This comes out of a conversation I was having with Paul Julian the first day I arrived. And we're just talking about two atoms that can be joined together to make a molecule. And he was saying, well, maybe there's something very interesting that can be studied where you have low entropy states, you can control atoms very well. And when you get them towards a molecule, you have tons of levels all over the place. This is very reminiscent of a quantum classical transition with very, you know, well-defined small state space going to something with a very large state space. And we could probe, you know, the reversibility of this. When does it stop being reversible? It's a very interesting problem. And I think quantum control really could help.
We put a picture on the archive on this in a minimal realization 3 weeks ago, so we can discuss that.
Okay.
But that's important as a
yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, sure.
What do you mean by reversible or not reversible?
Well, I mean, so if you can, assuming there's no extra dissipation, maybe you could, you know, bring it towards a molecule and then pull it apart again. But eventually, when you bring it towards a molecule, there are extra transitions that occur that pulses no longer become invertible, like you can't pull down again too.
So is it kind of like thinking about organic mixing in a closed, but you know, so it's a closed quantum system. I mean, everything is quantum here. There's no dissipation, but somehow because the dimension of the Hilbert space opens up so big that you kind of get lost and you can't, all the phases are somehow sort of trapped somehow and you can't reverse the wave function.
Well, you can, the thing is you can reverse the evolution if you can invert the sign of the whole Hamiltonian,
right.
But as our NMR friends very well know, I mean, maybe you cannot invert the whole Hamiltonian, but some part of it. And then it becomes interesting because then, you know, reversing is not trivial. If I go through a non-adiabatically through some transition like this one, okay, but also many body system, I populate maybe coherently everything, I have all my phases, but to go back, you know, can be highly non-trivial. It would be trivial if I can just reverse the whole Hamiltonian, but this is not always the case. And so this,
well,
actually, this is
a question.
Yeah.
This is a question about the technique. I mean, in general, of course, I mean, the evolution is unitary. I mean, Hamiltonian.
No.
Is
not true. Not true. No. Big mistake. I mean,
we are not going into CP violation business.
No, not going into that.
So
the whole point is what you are saying. As I said, I mean, this is a very subtle point, and we had a lot of discussions also in Banff last year exactly about this. So the whole point is what you say is of course exactly true. If I can reverse the sign in front of the whole Hamiltonian, okay. And this is true because everything is unitary, I can undo everything. But if, as it happens in most cases, you know, what I can access with my knobs is not the whole Hamiltonian, but just some part of it, then this becomes highly non-trivial. Okay.
But it's not a fundamental problem. It is a problem of finding the right.
Well, in this sense, it is not fundamental.
Control is about you have.
No, in this sense, it is not fundamental.
It is ultimately not a fundamental question. It is, but it's the challenge of control.
But that token, I would argue, the hyperperceivability is purely a matter of control, because if you can access arbitrary. Short time scale.
Sure.
Can
in fact, if you can catch all the photons in this room, you know, we go back, and as we discussed in our Friday discussion, if you can reverse everything, we can erase memory of people, so I'm no longer a classical observer, but I become a quantum observer, I'm in a superposition, and so on and so forth. So one could say that, you know, dissipation is just a technical problem, because if I could access all degrees of freedom of the electromagnetic field, I'm fine.
Yes.
For me, it's fundamental enough, you know.
It's also computationally probably intractable, like from a physical level.
We think if you have a large number, they recur, right?
Yes, sure. So certainly it is less fundamental, the problem we are talking about, but in many cases, I mean, you don't have access, and so, I mean, of course, it depends on the question of what you would call fundamental or not. But I mean, if you cannot manipulate really the system, if you have no way of manipulating, then you have a very, you know, fundamental obstacle.
And also, just to offer another perspective on what you're saying, if you take just I can write down very simple Hamiltonian, like an Heisenberg Hamiltonian for condensed matter, or very simple to write down, and yet if the number of subsystems which is involved becomes very large, they can develop, this is very known to those who
I do appreciate all these problems, but I mean,
that's actually a very good point. Yes.
Yeah. So these parameter reversal things have been proposed as methods for, and sorry to keep coming back to adiabatic, but that's what I'm sort of peddling right now. But they've been proposed for adiabatic computations where you move forward in the adiabatic interpolation parameter, and then you try to go backwards, just taking the interpolation parameter back. And it's unlikely that you'll excite a transition and then come back through the same transition on the way down. You'll probably produce entropy in this process. And it's unitary, but entropy, once you start measuring things, you'll find that you're not in the ground state at the beginning anymore. So it's a way of saying, all right, I'm not adiabatic, so I'm probably not at the end of this computation. I'm not in the actual ground state.
Can I ask a really stupid question? I know it's a stupid question because
I'm sure it isn't, but never.
No, I'm sure it is. So you've managed to prepare. Sorry, I'm standing because my back hurts, not because I'm competing with Tommaso.
Paul, we know that. No worries.
So you prepared something, and you mentioned before you prepared a pure state, but it's not a state which is the ground state of the system. Okay. Now, why can't I use stimulated emission to drive myself down to the ground state from the pure state? There's a single frequency transition.
No, I am thinking of a manual state.
Yeah, so what? I have a Hamiltonian. It has an eigenstate. You are in some excited state of the system. The Hamiltonian, the many-body Hamiltonian, has a ground state. There's a transition dipole matrix element between one and the other.
There's usually too many states.
It's
going to take me too long.
So this is the problem of you know, simulated annealing or solving the adiabatic. Why do we need adiabatic quantum computing if I can do the Hamiltonian? Why can I not cool? Because complexity of that is very large if the state is complex enough, and so it will take very, very long time.
Okay, but the long, it's proportional, it's just, not just, but if I understand correctly, it will take as long as the inverse of the level space.
That's causing excitation.
Yeah, I was worried about that.
Yeah.
But again, if it is the case that there are frequencies which are specific for that transition, mm-hmm. Then, quote, the only problem is that I have to wait long enough compared to the inverse of the
and the matrix element might be zero.
Well, I'm very sorry you failed miserably in producing a dumb question, because I remember when adiabatic quantum computing was proposed, we spent 2 months with Peter Zoller and three other people trying to answer that question, because we thought it must be possible, you know? So in the end we realized, and of course after you realize everything is easy, but that's not really in principle. Well, so we have the goals of our lives. And those are common goals of the lives of everybody in the room, so this is good. And it seems to me that this is some sort of a distilled version of what we had here as questions. But of course there are some aspects here which were questions that are not addressed there. And one that was mentioned by someone on this side, I think, was this measurement aspect. Okay. So like the diagnostics of my system, of my state.
That was on this side, but never
mind. On that side, well, yeah. I'm completely disoriented. Without a navigator, it's known. I don't know where I'm going. Yes. So are there other aspects? So this is one which maybe is not yet in there.
Can some of you, because here I have to say I'm blank. I don't know exactly. This is why I needed some guidance. I don't know exactly what the question means.
Just identification. Well, maybe for instance, okay, I mean, you brought it up. So maybe you, yeah, so what I was having in mind is, you know, quantum control of quantum information, we use the concept of tomography. Mm-hmm. Learn about states and mm-hmm. process tomography to learn about processes.
Yes.
And particularly with things like estimating Hamiltonian mm-hmm. parameters. So it would be very interesting, you know, for systems that are complex enough, we don't have certainly a really solid and a reliable analytic model, and I think the numerics have some limitations. It would be nice to infer the parameters of Hamiltonian, say, between two cold molecules.
So just a question regarding that. So do I understand that right, that you say that the actual process of doing the tomography, both of the system and of the process, is also a branch of quantum control?
Yes.
Okay.
And some people, like for instance Lorenzo, can explain why, in a sense, because he was, and also Luis was giving a talk about this aspect.
But can we turn back the time after all?
Well, we should ask Andrei whether we can turn back the time.
Well,
no, I'm kidding.
How
could you have to erase everybody's memories?
On that, how well do you actually know, like, the Hamiltonian for your systems? Because that's kind of like, how confident would you be, like, if you have a molecule, can you calculate?
It differs, depends on the molecule. This is not always. I mean, so what you are, let me try to translate this. So. What you are suggesting is that there are certain ways to kind of get to the Hamiltonian, even if you have incomplete knowledge about the system to start with.
Yes.
You could try to estimate it from your measurement.
Yeah. I mean that might be useful, but because yes, I mean there is a large branch of people doing molecular physics trying to calculate or measure exactly that, namely trying to understand. For example, yes.
For single molecule, you can do. Now, for the many body.
But how hard it is, right? I mean, it is very hard. Right? I mean,
finding, is what I would think, yeah.
Finding potential curves and states and coupling coefficients, etc. It's very hard.
It's
really hard.
So the question is when you go to, so when you talk about many body, you know, how many molecules we're talking about, and can you realistically do that?
Yes.
But I would say, as Kevin was saying, for a single molecule, this is spectroscopy, actually. And of course, it is very difficult, but it is also very much developed. And I do not have the feeling that we have anything to add to molecular spectroscopy.
Oh, but there are, I mean, there's so, if you
well,
take,
Paul
it's not true, that's actually not true. That's not true, Tomaso.
Okay, oh, interesting.
Oh, there is so, I mean, of the whole kind of molecules that we could be using and that we could be talking about, there is enough known to even to decent calculations, only of a very small amount of them.
No. What I'm saying is that it is not like, I mean, you have to do the hard work of somehow spectroscopy and studying flashbacks and so on and so forth in order to get that information. It is not like we can offer much improvement on that.
I don't know. That's a question. Well,
I think
cases it could.
Yeah. Anyway, spectroscopy is a inverse problem. So you're in the spectrum and you fit your potential. Like if you can just directly measure all these C6, C8, whatever coefficients, that will be a breakthrough. Kind of. Just measure directly the potential curve, that will be completely different.
So tomography is a very hard inverse problem also.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried, because tomography, the way that we understand it thus far, we are already quite challenged in making that work for relatively simple systems without going to the full computation of the molecules.
So Sophie, you see, oh, Paul has something.
I think it would be very useful.
Paul is a chemist.
I think the point is that once the design control schemes that take advantage of general features, not design schemes that rely specifically on particular aspects of particular molecules.
Mm-hmm.
If you do the latter, then you have a very restricted set of control scenarios, and it's not very useful. So whether or not you know the Hamiltonian for polyacetylene well or you don't, should not matter to the ability to, you know then that qualitatively you can do this control, and quantitatively you will differ depending upon the specific features of the potential. And I think that's the way
it works. Can I ask a question?
Okay, so like turn in the question. Yes.
So the point is, let's assume we know KRB very well, okay? Let's take one that is, I think all of these are very well known, but let's assume we know KRB very well, but we don't know lithium cesium, okay? Of course, they have a lot of things in common. I mean, they have all this, as what Misha said. I mean, usually their potentials can be described if we know all the kind of C2, C3, C4, etc., C6 in particular, right? If we know all that, very easy, right? So all of them kind of are built on similar principles. And all of them have vibrational states, all of them have rotational states, etc., right? And all of them are kind of built a similar way, namely bringing two alkali atoms together. So the question is it possible to work really hard to build a quantum control scheme which with a couple of kind of three, ideally it's only three or four kind of three parameters, that basically once you feed it the basic information that then can be whatever used as a genetic algorithm where you just kind of then put the next molecule in and it kind of spits this all out and then takes the next one and spits it all out, etc.
So what
once
you mean is to solve the Schrödinger equation for the molecule using a quantum computer based on KRB, for example,
yeah.
Right? But so it's a...
It's not quite that hard, right? Because you have, you know, in quantum control, we're typically, you know, you have an atom even, and it has an infinite number of energy levels. And we take a nice approximation, and we generally say, well, three are important. So we adiabatically eliminate everything else, and then we have just a few parameters that we need to measure to do the transitions we need. So it might be possible.
I mean, that's how we do it.
Yeah.
Nobody who calculates potential curves or states takes everything into account. It's just not possible. Right?
One of the guys, one of the fast track I went to, he had like thousands of transitions of stuff. So, and maybe you choose 5,000 or so, and you choose a subset of 1,000 or so, and you fit.
Well, I mean, at the end, it's a matter of. I mean, let's solve the qualitative problem first, and then see. I mean, it might be quantitative impossible. But the question is, I mean, the point is, and this is something which Bala, for example, also knows much better than I, or Robert, and so. So there are certain certain methods that are kind of well established in molecular physics, there you basically, I mean, you have to go through the whole machinery. It's very hard work, etc. But it's, I mean, you solve, for example, the same type of integral again and again, right? And of course, I mean, where the brain of the physicist comes in is to figure what kind of levels do we have to take into account, etc. Okay, I mean, I'm simplifying that answer. But the question is, can you replace some of this kind of working it out anew for every molecule? Can you replace that by some kind of learning algorithm or something like this? So Robert says no.
I think it depends on your control goals, and it depends on how similar these molecules are to one another. If you're, you know, if you take like two molecules and they're both, you know, they're both made of like one atom from the left side of the periodic table and one from the right,
yeah,
then they'll probably all have, you know, and this is speaking with no knowledge of molecular physics at all, they'll probably have, you know, similar low energy dynamics. That at least they're, if you look at their level structures, do they look like, you know, if you squint a little bit, that they might be have the same kind of transition?
It depends on how much you squint.
And the probability is
that. I would say yes, they would say no.
Yeah. I think everything depends also a lot on what you are wanting to achieve. And back to something that Paul said, I think that also the level of knowledge that you require about the Hamiltonian is very different depending in quantum information. If we want high fidelity, this is where you really better get to know your Hamiltonian as well as possible, because if you're aiming, and I shouldn't be saying this, you're the expert here, for optimal, provably optimal performances, you have to know your model quite well.
No, but with
if
more
you're happy with more good, but
normally not.
Then
it's
even worse
in molecules.
Because
you can
model
uncertainty,
and then get.
One can use the dynamic of the garden. Since molecules are, I hope they can be always classified with symmetries, right? To use the dynamic of the garden to suppress all the terms in Hamiltonian but one, and measure the parameters of that one, and then repeat with other control strategies.
Well, you have to see if
the thing is, there are two very many terms in the Hamiltonian, so that we should, I mean, we people from control should, I mean, I was once trained by Paul, okay? I was sitting in Paul, next to Paul Julian, okay? So I got for 1 year in my youth, and so I got a feeling for some Bonhoeffer curves, okay? Which have, they are called, with reason, spaghetti curves. So you have a humongous amount of states here, and the interactions between these particles, even if are enormously complicated, and it really depends, you know, I mean, macroscopic features like Feshbach resonances, like, you know, the variations by orders of magnitude in collisional properties depend on whether is this curve like this or is it like this, you know?
Yes.
So there is no hope that we can pretend.
So that's something which is not accessible to quantum control. That was basically my question.
No, it might, but at that point you have to get a really good model to start with. Only if you have, which is like a loop, because in order to do proper system estimation, then you also
we can give you as exact as you want. I can give you exactly the states of the constituent atoms. They are kind of infinitely well known, and I can exactly tell you how close they are together. I can tell you exactly how many electrons they have, right? I mean, at the end, it's only a question of computational power. The question is whether with quantum control and genetic algorithms, you can do that with less quantum, with less computing power than with more
traditional. I would say,
we
don't have
to start with the equation of this molecule. That's the point.
If you are willing to something that you're looking for, then yes.
Well, maybe actually, like, I mean, maybe the thing is that this is a specialized problem, right? So, and maybe.
Yeah,
but
there's a difference if you have a more specific.
Yeah, but the point is that's exactly what Tommaso said. They differ a bit in some aspect, and that means they differ hugely in some other.
Yeah, but if you have that, I think it would be okay if
that's
in some case. It might be that some observable properties, like certain yields in some reaction, they are very coarse. They are not so sensitively dependent upon the detail of the intermolecular potential. In that case, you can bootstrap, and you can probably come in with control and do better. But if you're really after what that little bug gets you,
could I maybe bring up my problem? Yeah, so we are trying to use pulses to cool multi-level systems. And basically, so we have these coherent trains of pulses. Yeah, so and we could maybe change the shape of the pulses and all of that. So, and this goes back maybe to the early days of this community, right? So
yes, this is where it was born. I mean, such people have invented it. Yes.
Great. Yes. Yeah, so
no. This is really where it came from. Absolutely.
We are trying to pull translational degrees of freedom just to begin this, for example, right? So. And then there are these questions, you get into these dark states and all of that. So how to get out of those dark states in the most efficient way. So, it could be, in your language, it could be the closed loop control. I mean, say, if you know the outcome of the cooling process and measure that, you could feed it back and all of that. So it'd be interesting to talk maybe about how to do that.
Yes, there are some people, this is where it came from, but there are also some people working currently on this type of problem. One is, for instance, Sophie has done some work in that direction, and also Christiane Koch, who is our participant, and she will be also here. She is really in between. So there are some of such people who can, and this is a problem which is well defined and can be done. Sophie.
Translational degrees of freedom. A lot of what we talk is calling internal degrees of freedom, and I think one problem you have with the molecules is already the translational cooling, or that you have a trade-off. You put either one or the other. So maybe you could. I don't know very much about the challenges of cooling the translational degrees of freedom for molecules.
The problem is that you get. For example, if you consider the Doppler cooling, right? You are getting to a bunch of levels. And basically, you are just, say, if you started with a certain level, with a certain population, right? So, and then if you started shining your laser, you basically decay to a bunch of other levels. So you don't have, in general, you don't have this so-called stacking transition.
Oh, I see. So there's no stacking transitions. Because if you were very naive, you could say, why wouldn't this Doppler cooling work for molecules just as well as for atoms? Because the complicated internal structure,
The density of state is so high that
basically you don't have a stacking transition, and so your cooling should be going to zero, because maybe you do a few photon absorption, and then it's no longer in a state where it interacts with your laser. So I know we're out of time, but it would be interesting maybe to learn more about the translation cooling, because I think that's something I don't know anything very much about.
So before everybody escapes, I do have the feeling that we did have a lot of discussion. I do have the feeling that we identified some things that, we nailed down some things, and we did have some communication, but of course we need, we speak different languages, so we need to a little bit
yet.
Of, we didn't solve the problem yet.
One
relevant question for the organizers is, of course, in a few weeks, everybody will be gone, okay? So things change, but one of the questions for the organizers is whether there is some point, in your opinion, to, at some point, maybe after the conference or something like this, to bring this up again and have some other session like this.
Yeah.
Starting from what we had today.
Yeah.
So.
And everybody who is new and who wants to join has to pass a test whether they look at them.
Exactly. Yes. Okay, so is there any concluding remark on the part of the participants? So it's just a way to kill the conversation, actually. Because we had to head to dinner. But, okay, so. Well,